with the Magi.
Now, I really love this meditation. The first thing that we, to start this meditation, is to go back to the roots. Everyone in this room is related because we have Adam as a common father. I think we all agree on that. And then, because there was a reset button before Noah, so we all have a common father in Noah. Do we all agree on that? We're all sons of Noah too. But then, after Noah, there were three children. And then from those three children, yeah, the Bible describes the whole thing, all the peoples of the earth came about. And even the Bible describes where they were settled and how this people descends from this other and so on. And so with those three brothers, it's where the difficulties begin. We don't know from whom of the three Deb comes from. And so on. So that's where we're not really sure if we're related anymore. That's where it just starts to get complicated. But the Bible is more, and I already said that in another meditation, it's not so much about them being three and then we don't know from which one of the three we all come from or you come from. But the problem is that when the Bible describes that not so much as diversification, which could be something that's positive, the Bible describes that as division. So those three brothers that are supposed to be a new generation after the flood and their descendants begin to fight with one another. Actually, already the first generation, one of the brothers, his father Noah, who was a just man, after the flood gets drunk. So that was the best man on earth. But after that, his son uncovers his shame. And of course, that was a great sin. No? And so you see this wickedness happening and all this division among the brothers, among the sons and grandsons and so on. Now, from all the corners of the earth, the three Magi, they come, and the tradition is that they come from all over the world. There's another tradition that they all come from Persia. And if you look at the sarcophagi in the Vatican museums, they all have these hats, like Smurf hats, because that's the Persian hats. So, the tradition is that they come from all the confines of the earth. And in reality, these three Magi are the three sons of Noah coming back. And it's a very beautiful moment of the scripture, because you see that it just seemed that they were just growing further and further apart. And there was not any reason for them for reconciliation. So what Jesus is saying through the Epiphany is that in me there's reconciliation. In me there's true peace. In me there's a return to unity, so that the three brothers can come back. And of course, the coming back of the three brothers means the comeback of the whole humanity in a unity. So Jesus is that factor of unity that the world needed desperately, if the world was not just going to destroy itself. So that is like the introduction to the three wise men. But the main course of the meditation of the wise man is a symphony by one of my favorite composers. He's an Austrian composer. His name is Anton Bruckner. And I mean, he's not as famous as Beethoven or Mozart or Schubert, but let's say that he is in the AA baseball league. But he is really played very often in concert halls all over the world. So Father Louis and I went like 2 years ago, because it was free, to a concert in this concert hall of Yale when we were in Cheshire. And we went to hear the Eighth Symphony of Bruckner. And Father Louis didn't know much about Bruckner, but he was like, and well, Father Louis is like very, very intelligent, so I'm very happy that he liked it. But this symphony of Bruckner is a very Catholic composer. He was always praying the rosary, not just every day, but in every free time he was playing his rosary. He never married. He wanted to be a priest, but then the discernment also of his spiritual directors, this was not his vocation. But he never really found the right woman, so he lived alone all his life. And he was very good friends of the fathers, the Augustinian monks in Austria. He played the organ. He was the master organist. And he was so wonderful in playing organ and in his personal compositions that the University of Vienna, that was at that time the best music institution in the world, hired him to give him the position of the professor of composition in the University of Vienna. And I don't know if you've heard of Johannes Brahms. He was in Vienna too. And they were rivals. I mean, to be rivals, it has something of positive in it, because if you consider someone else your rival, that means that you consider him at least to be in your same league. And Brahms is like also one of those that are very, very high. So, and Anton Bruckner had this composition that was different than others. So it was not like Johannes Brahms, who was more classic. And more classic is more repetitions and nice themes, and then you come back to those themes in a very clear way, and it has a certain size and balance, a little bit like Beethoven, like Mozart. But Bruckner came from a new wave of composers that were just telling stories. So the symphonies could be incredibly long. So a whole symphony of Beethoven can be 25 minutes long. One movement of the company of Bruckner is 25 minutes long. So it's more than 1 hour hearing a symphony. Like, that's why some people don't hear him, because they're afraid of the length. So it's like, I'd rather see a movie. And so, because they're very, very long symphonies. But he's telling a story. And of course, nobody knows what is the story unless you're a good friend of Bruckner. And I think in many years in Germany, I was a friend of Bruckner, like listening, and he was with me in my rides all over Austria and in Germany. And one of the persons that I visited was an expert in Bruckner. She wrote 3 books on Bruckner, was a member of the Bruckner International Society. And I told her about this, what I'm going to tell you. I said that I had heard some passages of the gospel and messages of the gospel in the symphonies of Bruckner. And she said, which ones? Describe me. And that was like the Symphony 5, the Symphony, and the Symphony 4, especially. And then I saw something else in Symphony number 2, but I told her, Symphony number 4 is the Epiphany. It's 4 movements. It's one for the King of the West, one for the King of the South, like North Africa, one for the King of Asia, like, you know, the Mongols or the Ukrainians, the Cossacks, like, coming. And then I described what was happening in the symphony, and she really liked it. She really wanted me to write it down, but it was complicated. So I'm not such a writer. But before she died, she asked me again, and she actually asked me to go to Austria to an event or something. And I told him that I couldn't go to that event, first of all, because it was not possible practically, but also because I don't know about music very much. I just hear music. But if any musician asks me about, oh, but what about this and this and this, I don't know what to answer. So it would be like ridiculous for me to participate in an event for musicians without knowing music. And then she agreed. you're right. So your field is another field. But the idea is the following. When the symphony starts, it starts with a star. And of course, the music makes the sound of this star that is kind of like calling the whole universe. And the symphony starts more like tan, tan, ta-dan, tan, tan, ta-dan. And then it just gets like more beautiful because the violins start to start the symphony. And then in the first movement, apparently that star calls the heart of the King of the West. And the King of the West, just imagine this castle in England or in Germany or in Denmark. And you know, this king just says, yes, this is the adventure. Let's go and find this king. And then you hear the theme of the King of the West. And it's a theme that is so beautiful. It really sounds like, oh, he's coming from this incredible castle. This is like Sleeping Beauty or something. And then this theme is the King of the West, and he's so proud and so wonderful. So he goes out, and it's not just that he goes out. He brings all his family along. I mean, it's the whole castle, the nation, because when the symphony continues, you even hear children like playing themes. And it's like, okay, he's not alone. He is with children. And then it just continues. And this movement is 20 minutes long. You have to think about it. And then there comes a moment in which it just slows down. And it's, you feel that it just stopped. So you think, or at least I thought, there's something wrong with my stereo. So I have to increase the volume. And then it was like, boom. And it's like, no. So that's about minute 8. And what is going on? The thing is that at that moment, the star hid from the king. He couldn't see the star anymore. And he didn't know where to go. It's like, am I supposed to go to the right? Am I supposed to go to the left? I'm in the middle of a forest somewhere between Belgium and Germany. And I don't know what to do now. And so he is very sad, and he doesn't know what is going on. That is something that we call a crisis. And I think that maybe most of us have experienced that in one moment or the other. You really don't know how it continues, how it goes on. But then it just starts to sound again. There's music again. So apparently he found the star again. And then it increases a little bit the volume, and then it just starts a theme that you didn't hear before. And in my humble opinion, those are the most beautiful 20 seconds in all the history of music. It's like amazing. And what happened in that moment is that the king, when he came out of that, he realized that he was more beautiful than what he thought before. But he had to go to a crisis to say, that theme that you were playing at the beginning, nice theme, the idea that you had of yourself, so proud, and you can make it, and you can go to Bethlehem, and you can everything. You're the King of the West. Like, no. I'm just going to show you who you really are. And you think he's going to show him, he's going to humiliate him. He's not humiliating him. He's just teaching him humility. And then when he comes out, he just realizes that he's worth more than what he thought before. And then he continues his search. And then eventually he gets there. And then it starts the second movement. And the second movement, normally in all the symphonies, is the slow movement. When we are young, we just want to skip it. But then when we grow old, we just love to hear it. I don't know what's with the second movements, that I'm starting to love the second movements in the symphonies. And I didn't like them because they were so slow or sad. And so you kind of hear the desert and the heat and the animals just like walking slowly. And then, yes, you kind of understand that there's a theme, but it's so slow that you cannot put it together. And that movement is like 16, 18 minutes long. It's like you're watching the it's like, okay, so I'm gonna hold on to this movement. But as this king grows closer and closer to Jerusalem, the movement starts to speed up. And when he comes to Jerusalem, it comes and it's very coherent and very beautiful. And it's kind of like a life that sometimes we just drag our life. It's kind of a boring life. And when we grow closer and closer to God, we grow in this dynam, he energizes us. And he puts everything together, everything that we are. And then there's the third movement, and this is the King of the East. And you know that it's the King of the East because you hear horses. The main theme is ta 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 ta. And then you really see the horses. And it's like, wow, finally an exciting movement. And you're all in about the third movement. But then after a couple of minutes, you see that the ta-tan, ta-ta, ta-tan just repeats itself. And then a third time, and it's like, okay, I'm kind of growing tired of this ta-tan, ta-ta, ta-ta-tan. I remember when I was a kid, I was visiting my uncle in Washington State. No? And at that time, the movie Top Gun, like the first part, was new. I don't remember what year was that, but I was in the States, and we went to see Top Gun. And then there was like this ta da 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 da, and I was this singing that like 12 hours a day until my uncle just grew angry and he said, okay, you just come, you just stand here before my window, like in front of the house, and I'm gonna be in my room. And I want you to say that all the time until I tell you to stop. So I was just like in front of his window, like saying this jingle all the time. And then I didn't want to say the jingle anymore. So, and then he came out and said, okay, you want to continue? No, please, I don't want to continue. Okay, you can come in. And this is the third king. I mean, he's going over and over and over the same thing. And then there's a moment during that movement where you say, it's not that he's doing it on purpose. The king, I mean, the distance is a very long distance. If they're coming all the way from Kachatka, or, you know, like from the end of Siberia. But it's also that he doesn't know how to stop. He doesn't know what comes next. He just knows to do that, just circles. And that is very interesting because all the races, all the peoples of all the world have had this conception of time, that's the very original conception of time being a circle, a cycle. Because it's so obvious, there's spring, there's winter, and then it happens the same thing the next year, and also daily, it just, the sun, and it just turns. So what is time? It's just a circle. What is life? What is existence? And then they go further into philosophical and theological ideas. There was never a beginning, and there will never be an end. And then, of course, you bring it to those ideas that are floating around now, like karma, and then like everything is just like moving around, and then you get sick of it, like the king of the East, or like the Top Gun jingle. And it's like, how do I get out of here? And then, of course, Buddha develops a theory, and then there's the escape, or the nirvana, or this is so terrible that it's better just to disappear, to be one with nature. But what is very original about the Judeo-Christian faith is that already in the Old Testament, we hear this mysterious phrase when the mother tells her son, "Son, I just know that God made everything out of nothing." And that's the Maccabees, no? In the book of the Maccabees. And then she asks him to be strong in his martyrdom because he has to die. So what we believe as Christians is that there was a beginning. And you cannot take it for granted, because that's very original from us, that there was a beginning. And not only we believe that there was a beginning, but through Revelation, we believe that there is going to be an end. So it's different, this from this, but at the same time, it's undeniable that there is a cycle aspect of time. So what we believe in time really is that there is a cycle, but that cycle had a beginning and it had an end. So that, for example, if in the liturgy, because we have ordinary time, we have Advent, we have Lent, we have Easter time. So even if we are having the same Easter or the same Christmas every year, it's not the same. It's the same, but it's not the same. It's the same because it is Christmas. But it's not the same because time has passed and you have changed, and the way that you see Christmas this year is different than the way that you saw Christmas last year, because you have grown, hopefully, so that you see that this combination of cycle and time and eternity, and beginning and end, looks like a tornado. We're back to the tornado. So there is a repetition, but it's never the same. It's never the same because there's a growth. And that's why it's this growth in circles. And that's why our life is never boring. It's like you will never hear from someone, hopefully you don't hear, you can hear from Mr. Grinch, but not from, it's like, "Oh, Christmas, but we had that last year. We already had Christmas." It's like, "No, that's Mr. Grinch, right?" But no, I mean, because it's never the same. It's like you go deeper into it. So no matter how old you are, it's just the new Christmas. And actually, it might be because you say, "Oh, Christmas is so beautiful for children." Yes, it's beautiful for children, but it might be even more beautiful for very old folks, because they have all this spiritual baggage that they can enjoy Christmas all the more. So this king with all the followers is coming, and it's kind of desperate. Like, I don't know what to do with this circle. It's curious that the Eastern king comes with the circle, you know, like Japan and China, India, circle, circle, circle. And then he comes with that circle. Anton Bruckner was really a genius. So, because I really think he thought about all these things, and he was also praying about all these things. And so they come, and when they come to Jerusalem, you see how the thing evolves and comes to a natural end. So that the whole movement is telling you, "I arrived. We are in Jerusalem," because they arrive to Jerusalem and then they go to Bethlehem. "We are in Jerusalem. It's over. We can just rest. We got here." So the kings are there. And I told you that in a symphony there are normally four movements. So there's the king of the west, the king of the south, the king of the east. And what do we have left? What's the other fourth king? And of course you could say, "Oh, of course, it's the real king. It's Jesus." No, it's Herod. He is king in Jerusalem. So the fourth movement also starts a little bit like the calling of the star at the beginning. It starts like dun, dun, dun. You say, "Okay, that's the star, right? We're in Jerusalem, that's the star. Dun, 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 dun." It's like, "Whoa, where are we?" And it starts a little bit like the first star, because because he's trying to be the real king. He would like to be the real king, the Messiah. But in fact, Herod is the first Antichrist of history. Because Antichrist means against Christ, no? Like destroying Christ, killing Christ. And he is the first one who explicitly wants to kill Jesus and is doing everything that he can to kill Jesus. So of course he is the Antichrist, and he's a king, and he's zealous. So you see how the three wise men, they go to Herod. So Herod welcomes them, and you know the story. He's trying to trick them, and then you go where is the Messiah supposed to be born? In Bethlehem. Okay, so you have to go this direction. That's the direction of Bethlehem. You go and greet this king, and then you come back to me, and you tell me what you saw so that I can also go there and adore him. Okay, so they leave the palace of Herod, and you can see, like, this music that is nice. I mean, you're combining the three themes of the three magi. And then they're arriving to Bethlehem. And as they arrive to Bethlehem, the emotion is growing. And you can see it in the music. The emotion, the expectation is growing and growing and growing. And then you're thinking, oh, I remember the minute 9 of the first movement. That was so glorious, the most beautiful moment of music that I've heard, and wonderful. So now something wonderful is going to happen. This is going to be great. And then when they get there, the music, instead of exploding, like with something spectacular, just goes down. And then the music starts to get a little bit like childish. Why? Because they see a baby in diapers. And the curious thing is that it couldn't have been better than that, because that's just what it was. And the Magi know that it couldn't have been better than that. It's like a moment in which you say, this is more than any expectation that I could have had. This is amazing. And then they're like with the mouths open, and it's like baby Jesus is like saying hello, and the Magi just giving him the finger. He's just like, no, sorry. just, you know, like giving him his hand, and the baby Jesus just taking it and shaking it. And in this Magi, this very powerful men in that come and have so much wisdom and so much power, and they've had so many experiences on the way, they're just like crying. They're just so moved. Now, what were they so moved for? What did they see? Like, of course, it doesn't say in the Bible. This is, of course, just a speculation of mine. But I think they saw God. They did see the face of God. They kind of knew that this kid was God. And I think they saw that because when they entered that grotto, they didn't see any guard. They didn't see any fence. This kid can be kidnapped anytime, can be killed. He's so delicate. He's just a kid, a normal baby. And the only one who's here guarding the situation is Joseph. And yes, I mean, Joseph, if you're trying to do anything to Mary or to Jesus, he can be a monster, really. Joseph will just defend them with all his life. But he's such a nice person to look at. I mean, wow, he's such a nice person. I mean, I'm sure that this kid has entrusted him with his life, but I don't know if I would entrust him with my life if I am the king of the West, because poor man. And in this woman that is so good, I have never seen such a lovely lady in my life. Such a lovely lady. And they are like shaken. It's like, this is so wonderful. We want to stay here forever, kind of. And why they knew that he was God, it's because they were thinking, I mean, my opinion, they were thinking only someone who is really, really big can afford being small. Someone who is really, really powerful can afford being so weak. Because, you know, there's something about us men, not women, in general, but something that we like to show off. And we like to just to look strong, you know. We're strong, and when we're having conversations, yeah, I know, yeah, I've been there. He asked me before he said that, and I've read those books, and so many things, so much vanity. But, you know, men are like that, even among deer, you know, they're fighting. Like, let's see who gets her, you know? It's like fighting, like showing off. So they say, he cannot be human because this is not normal. So he must be divine. He must be divine because he's not afraid. As someone who can do everything and at the same time is so accessible, so reachable, so lovable. It's impossible. It's almost like eternity coming in inside of time, or the Creator coming inside of creation. And the devotion, the Catholic devotion, has really an image for that. And that's the child Jesus of Prague, the Holy Infant. It's a kid, but he has a crown and he has the whole world in his hand. And he's just smiling at you like, I love you. It's like, wow, he's really powerful. Yes, but I love you. I am. But that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that I'm a baby for you. And they got that. These kings, this magi, got that. And so they leave. And of course, you know how the story continues. And then the symphony continues a little bit further. Jesus goes to Egypt, and then it finishes when he comes back from Egypt and is facing the Holy Land again, coming back from Egypt. But we don't go there. Just let's go with the Magi back to our places, back to our nations, just knowing the world is a mess, but the world will be okay. We have seen the salvation. Salvation comes.